There's been a lot of news dealing with immigration lately. President Trump has moved to cap the number of refugees allowed to enter the U.S., and reporting from the New York Times revealed some of the surprising methods the president at one time floated for border defense, including mentions of a moat filled with alligators and shooting migrants in the legs to slow them down. Maria Sacchetti is an immigration reporter for The Washington Post. Maria, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Well, so much news out lately related to immigration, and I think in the public eye, often covered up by all the impeachment news. But before we get into the particulars, there's a lot going on, right?
There is. I mean, just mentioning, you were just mentioning the New York Times reporting on the snakes and the moats and things like that. I mean, my colleagues confirmed that information that, you know, even though the White House had denied it, and actually, you know, that my colleagues found that President Trump said that that he wanted U.S. forces with bayonets to also enforce, you know, the border, to control the border. So it's really been quite a time.
Let's start with the Flores settlement. That has been in the courts a lot lately. Can you remind us what that dictates?
So this is a 1997 federal court agreement between lawyers representing immigrant children and the government. And they agreed a long time ago on a set of basic provisions for detaining migrant children that they had to have. You know, they were supposed to be held in the least restrictive setting possible. They were supposed to be cared for. A lot of rules. And at the time, most of the children were unaccompanied. Now, you know, we're seeing that most of the children are actually with parents. And so what the Trump administration wants to do is expand family detention to deter like the record surge of families that crossed the border this year, seeking asylum. But the judge in this case, who has overseen it for quite some time and was critical of the last administration too, said, "Look, that's not what the government agreed to in 1997, and this new proposal, just because you don't agree with it, you can't carry it out." So we'll see what the government does next.
Right. So what does that mean in practical terms for families detained while trying to cross the border? What is their current status?
Well, so the government has, until recently, the government had released tens of thousands of parents and children in the United States pending an asylum hearing. You know, they advocates say they're fleeing violence in their homelands and they're seeking protection in the United States. So, but right now, the government can only detain children with their parents up to about 20 days, and then most are released. However, right now, many, many families are not even getting into the United States to be detained. They're being pushed back to Mexico and threatened someday perhaps with the possibility of being sent back to Central America or other countries they pass through on their way to the United States to seek protection there instead. So the Trump administration's goal right now is to prevent people from even getting a foothold in the United States, because they say, you know, most people don't win their asylum claims and most people are never deported, even if they don't prevail in court.
Well, let's turn to another story that's very related to that, a Supreme Court ruling on asylum changes the administration had made regarding the rules of who is eligible to apply for asylum. What had the administration done here?
So the Supreme Court last month said the Trump administration could start denying asylum to people who traveled through a third country to get to the United States. And, of course, that applies to, you know, almost all the Central Americans who would have started their journeys in Honduras, Guatemala, or El Salvador, and then traveled through Mexico. And the idea is that they should have sought protection in Mexico instead. It's the first country they stepped into. And the White House's theory is that people are coming to the United States to work and not, or to join relatives, and not really seeking protection that they would be allowed to seek under the asylum law. But it's a complicated question. You know, these border cities in Mexico, so where migrants are staying, they're unfamiliar. They don't have a lot of money, and they're quite dangerous. I mean, migrants have been kidnapped. There have been reports of rape and murder. People feel that they're in a lot of danger there, and they were. And those, you know, with legitimate asylum claims really can't go back to their homelands. And people say, you know, perhaps someone from Honduras could seek refuge in Guatemala, but Guatemala doesn't have a strong asylum program. And even Mexico's is not as strong as the United States asylum program. And so the people feel that migrants really don't have a lot of options, that actually instead the United States should just use the asylum system it has and make it work, have people be interviewed by asylum officers, and if their claims are legitimate, then, you know, let them stay, and if they're not, then refer them for deportation.
Talking to Maria Sacchetti from the Washington Post. She covers immigration there, talking about a lot of different pieces of news related to federal policy on immigration and in particular the southern border. And Maria, we've heard reports over the last, I guess, couple of years that the system for evaluating claims of asylum has been kind of overwhelmed. We have a backlog under what had been the present system of people seeking asylum and waiting to get that hearing.
Well, there has been an enormous number of people surrendering at the border and claiming asylum. And that has definitely presented a challenge, you know, to the American authorities. I mean, they didn't have enough space to hold them. Children fell ill. Some had already been ill in the journey. They weren't able to provide medical care quickly enough. Some children died. And so there has been this influx, and there's been a lot of debate over how the government has responded to it. I mean, and I think it's a complicated situation, and there are many different sides and many different opinions about what's happening. People seem to agree that part of this is also fueled by smuggling. You see in Guatemala in particular, for example, smugglers were offering discounted trips, safe trips, you know, to people, parents who brought a child with them because they were aware at the time that they were likely to be released into the United States. But what is especially complex is that you have a mix of economic migrants and people, you know, seeking a better life in the United States. But you also have people fleeing, you know, brutal domestic violence, which the Trump administration has tried to make, you know, victims of domestic violence, make it harder for them to qualify for asylum. People fleeing gang violence, people fleeing hunger. And some are eligible for asylum and some perhaps are not. But the challenge for the U.S. authorities is, how are you going to process their cases? How are you going to examine each case to make sure that you don't send someone back into a dangerous situation? That's one of the biggest questions right now. And a lot of people feel that the Trump administration's policies are not protecting people's right to seek asylum. You know, that there are people who are going to be swept into other countries who have legitimate claims and could be harmed or killed because the United States didn't adhere to its promises to uphold its asylum laws.
Talking to Maria Sacchetti from the Washington Post, looking at some of the big immigration stories you might have missed in the midst of all the impeachment proceedings. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of some of these changes to asylum policy, to refugee laws, lowering the number of refugees able to come into the country? We'll talk about that in just a few moments. Do you have a question for our guest about some of the latest news you're seeing on these various immigration issues? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about some of the big immigration-related stories from recent weeks. Maria Sacchetti is with us from The Washington Post. You can join in with your questions and thoughts at 800-642-1234. We'll bring on a caller now. Dennis is with us in Two Rivers. Dennis, hi.
Hi. I was wondering, does the federal government have anything like eminent domain where they could take somebody's land to put up a fence or a border wall? And if they, and if it does, could states' rights allow a state to say, no, we're not going to allow that?
Dennis, thanks for the call. This is a recurring issue, Maria. It came up, I think, in that New York Times reporting, among other places, about whether the government, federal government, has access to land to build the wall.
Right. And so, that, I mean, that is something that is unfolding on the border and has been really since the mid-2000s. And there have been, there are many, many lawsuits that are pending, and they're the government is trying to do that, and the government is trying to build the wall, especially in areas where it really doesn't have to deal with that problem, you know, so they can put it up more quickly. But I know of several lawsuits that have been pending over slivers of land, you know, just pieces of it, and they've been pending for years. So it's not easy in this country, you know, to take away someone's land. And so it really varies depending on where you're looking.
Thanks for that call. Dennis, want to get into the refugee cap. It's been cut under the Trump administration over the years. What is the latest on the country's refugee program?
So the president, the White House recently said that it plans to reduce the cap to 18,000, which is the lowest it's been since the program was created 4 decades ago. So this is and it's already much, much lower. I mean, when President Obama had set it at around 110,000 in his last year in office, and so fewer than that got in, but it is still much more generous because it was at a time when, and it still remains so, when the number of refugees worldwide is really enormous. Millions and millions of people have been displaced from Syria, from seeing people in from Venezuela, from really all over the world, Congo. And so this has a very significant effect.
And that 18,000, I understand there are carve outs within that as to where some of those 18,000 are dedicated to certain parts of the world and certain issues. Is that right?
Correct. I mean, so there where before there were carve outs for people from different parts of, for example, the largest group was from Africa, and then there were others, you know, from Latin America and Asia and things like that. But now it will be certain. It will dovetail with the administration's policy priorities. So, like, there were carve-outs for people fleeing religious persecution and other reasons. So,
and let's take it back, Maria, to where we started out with. We're getting some inside scoops from your colleagues and from the New York Times on what went on and what has gone on within the Trump administration. Some frustration at various points about the inability to enact some of their policies. What do we know now that we didn't maybe a week or two ago?
Well, I mean, there's I mean, if you're an immigration reporter nowadays, you're just constantly being hit with new information all the time. I mean, I think the Trump administration's frustrations have been ongoing. So you have this political tornado, right, where we're talking about the president's musings, you know, on bayonets and snakes and the ways to control the border that aides really did not take seriously. I mean, they obviously did not, you know, have forces equipped with bayonets at the border. We don't have a moat, you know, at the border. But you know, the president has claimed that that's all fake news. But my colleagues have also verified the New York Times report. But separately, you have a lot of things that are taking place that are having a real impact on immigration. The Trump administration has tried to limit legal immigration, and they have done that where they can. And the refugee cap is one very good example of that. But there's other ways where they're kind of throwing sand in the gears of the legal immigration system, demanding more evidence, you know, for people trying to petition for their relatives or for asking for visas, things like that. And then they're also having a real impact at the border. I mean, over the past few months, you had this enormous, number come in of folks in May, 144,000. But since then, it has steadily declined. It's still high, you know, which is frustrating to President Trump because he campaigned on really lowering immigration levels and definitely securing the border. Those were his big campaign promises, and he has not been able to keep them. But the difference now, and it's quite serious, is that the border crossings of the past year are not the border crossings of the 1990s or early 2000s, when it was mostly single adult men, you know, coming over to work. I mean, now you're seeing, you know, about one in three apprehensions, so to speak, you know, are children, and they're younger than ever. And so when you're talking about, you know, this kind of crackdown and talking about a big wall and talking about bayonets, I mean, you're talking about, you know, kids under 12.
We'll leave it there. Thanks to Maria Sacchetti from The Washington Post, taking us on a whirlwind tour of a lot of the top immigration stories out of Washington.